Hey, y'all. Welcome to another edition of the Rose Chat Podcast. You're going to love today's show. Susan Young is back with us, and Teresa's going to tell us all about it.
Susan Young is a perennial gardener who became hooked on roses after buying one bagged rose from Kmart. She was with us in 2015 to talk of her growing from that one rose to more than 250. You can still enjoy that podcast by searching it out on our website, rosechatpodcast.com. Susan is now the owner of Restoration Roses and Nursery, and her rose collection is well over 750 and just keeps growing. As a collector of heirloom roses, she is working hard to bring many of them back into the public arena, many of them from near extinction. Susan has a lot going on, and we can't wait to hear all about it. Yes, it started with one rose, but hey, we all have to start somewhere.
Y'all stay with us. The Rose Chat Podcast starts now.
It's time for the Rose Chat Podcast, a podcast dedicated to celebrating the world's most beloved flower, the rose. Join award-winning gardeners Chris Van Cleef and Teresa Byington as they chat with rose lovers and experts from around the globe. With each episode, you'll gain valuable knowledge and insights to achieve the rose garden you've always dreamed of. Listen now as we explore the world of roses.
Try Haven Brand Soil Conditioners, providing generations of gardeners with a truly all-natural alternative to chemical fertilizers with their line of composted manure and alfalfa teas. Easy to brew and use on all indoor and outdoor plants. Find them online at manuretea.com.
Hey y'all, it's Chris Van Cleef. I'm the creator of the Rose Chat Podcast. For me, growing roses has become a passion. My membership in the American Rose Society has helped me to create the rose garden of my dreams, right in my own backyard. I also enjoy the camaraderie and support of a network of rose growers who are eager to share, learn, and grow together. To learn more about membership in the American Rose Society, visit their website, rose.org.
Hey Susan, welcome to Rose Chat.
Thank you for having me. I am very glad to be here.
Well, we're so glad to catch up. Now, when you were last on Rose Chat, as I recall, you had rose fever, you were living in Nashville, and you had a couple hundred roses. Has anything changed since then?
Yeah, a little bit. I still have rose fever. And I'm ashamed to say, I don't know how many roses I have. I'd say it's pretty close to 1,000 now, 1,000 different varieties.
Oh, are you in the same location?
Well, I think last time I was on Rose Chat, I talked about wanting to buy a little piece of property because Nashville was getting so crowded, and I did get a little piece of property, and so my pot ghetto has now moved out to my rose farm. I'm a rose farmer.
So what does it mean to be a rose farmer?
I am growing roses. I originally wanted to collect a lot of the old ones and the found ones and kind of get those spread around through a nursery, and I'm still doing that, but I met a gal here who was a floral designer, and she just went crazy over my roses and asked if I would be interested in selling cut stems, and lots of folks are into that. Nashville's got a big local flower movement, and my roses, I think, just kind of fill a niche that nobody else, there just aren't too many people who grow 800,000 roses in Nashville.
Well, I'm sure that's very true.
So I'm kind of it, and you know, the old roses and the old hybrid teas and stuff, they're just real different from what you can get imported or flown in, or, you know, mm-hmm. So lots of designers really like being able to work with, you know, the original garden roses.
Mm-hmm.
Garden roses are really trendy right now, but, you know, most of them are grown to look like the original ones. So, and I've already got them. So it's just, I don't know. It's just kind of a serendipity, I guess.
Well, we like to know where our food comes from, and I think it's a bonus when you know where your flowers come from.
Teresa, I'm 30 minutes from my field to the flower shop, and that just gives so much in vase life and quality, freshness. You know, they don't get, they're never packaged. So they just look like you went out and picked them that morning, which is what I did. So a lot of the designers who really want to work with the local stuff really enjoy that kind of just picked garden look.
Mm-hmm.
And I love seeing them get excited about old roses.
Now you have all of these old roses. Where are you finding them?
Oh my gosh. Well, I can't tell you that. I mean, I can't.
Now, you're not one of these women that I see in the cemetery.
With her snips and her purse.
Yeah.
Well, I have vowed I am not going anywhere without my snips anymore.
Well, there you go. You cannot be a true rose lover and not have some on you, because I tell you, I have had to use my teeth before.
That's a Rose Chat exclusive.
Yeah. Maybe you should edit that out.
Oh no, I love it.
but literally I have, you know, bitten a stem when I couldn't tear it. Yeah, I have been traveling everywhere. I mean, I think we talked about New Orleans. I'm pretty sure we talked about New Orleans last time, but I have found some other just kind of individuals who have big rose gardens out west. And then I have really become good friends with Jill Perry, who is the curator at the San Jose Heritage Rose Garden, which is over 3 acres.
Mm-hmm.
And I met Anita Clevenger, who is the curator for the Sacramento Historic Cemetery, which holds all the found roses in California and a lot of the Texas ones as well as the things that were grown from about 1840 or so on, when the cemetery was, was first, what do you call it, dug, designed. And, you know, Teresa, because you go to California a lot, those roses out there, they are big.
It is unbelievable. You know, I say to everyone, roses love California, and California loves roses. I mean, it is a match made in heaven out there.
It is. And it's so wonderful to drive down just any suburban street and see roses everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a real treat, you know. So this last trip, it was kind of funny. Lamarck is an old, I think it's a Tignoisette, but I was out with Jill. She was taking me to San Juan Bautista, which is an old Spanish mission town that still has some old cemetery roses there. And she said, I'm going to take you by this plant of Lamarck I want you to see. And it was growing on the site where evidently a sugar magnate out there. Have you ever heard of Spreckles Sugar?
Not sure about that one.
Yeah, Spreckles Sugar. It was like a California sugar manufacturer, and they had a huge mansion where now there are some condos. But Jill was able to go back, and she had been doing research on the location, and because this was a prominent family and a prominent home, she was able to find written records, newspaper clippings, things about the home and the roses they grew, and she was actually able to identify it as Lamarck, and that was originally planted there, and it is still growing up through everything else that is there. It was amazing.
Those stories are just amazing.
It was amazing. And, of course, I had to get a few, you know, cuttings. And that was just kind of what I did for several days. I went all over the Gold Rush country, Columbia, California. My word. Angels Camp. All these old mining towns where, you know, where a lot of those found roses were first found. It was just mind-boggling to see these roses that had been there close to 200 years that were still cranking them out. And then it was just so saddening to say, hey, what about, you know, like the original Angels Camp Tea, which is just a remarkably beautiful rose. There were four of them on each corner of a grave there in Angels Camp, California, and they died in the drought. They're gone. So, you know, if someone had not gathered that and spread it around, it just would be another one of those lost roses. And it was just such a thrill to be able to see these huge, beautiful roses where they are so happy. You know, just growing like trees, growing up out of, I mean, Fortune's Double Yellow, which is a pretty tender rose, it was growing like a weed most places, everywhere we went. It was like seeing it was almost as frequent as you see, you know, knockouts in the strip malls. I'm not kidding.
Wow.
It was, yeah. And then to go to the Sacramento Garden and the San Jose Heritage Rose Garden. And then, I don't know if you saw the pictures I posted of the peacocks on Instagram, but there was a wonderful woman who has a, I don't know, I'd say 25-year-old, rose garden that literally you're just in tunnels of roses. I mean, just, you're just, the pathways are almost completely covered over in roses.
Now, as you're traveling around, what do you think has been the most unusual rose story that you've heard?
Oh, my gosh, that's a good question. I know what it is, and I got such a kick out of this. I don't know how unusual. I guess it is pretty unusual. It may not be to total rose nuts, but I remember laughing and thinking, this is so classic. We were driving around in that little mission town, San Juan Bautista, and they've identified lots of found roses there that folks in the city have really taken an interest in caring for and preserving. And I was with Jill Perry, the curator at San Jose, and then her friend Tamara, who had the Tunnels of Roses garden, and they were talking about roses they've collected and places they'd been, and I think it was Jill who said, where were we when we collected that yellow tea, one like we found, you know, in Colombia? And Tamara said, wasn't that the time I screamed rose and jumped out of the car and almost got hit by a car?
Oh, my. Yeah, there's just times like that. There's just times like that.
Yeah, and I just thought, you know, only a true rose lover would get that. When you identify a rose by, wasn't that the one I almost got killed for? you know, oh, yeah, yeah, I think that was. Remember, that was so funny. Boy, he barely missed you, you know. And I'm thinking, this is for a plant. You know, this is for a plant.
And they're thinking, this is so worth it. This is so worth it. Now,
absolutely.
I saw something on your website that I think must bring you great pleasure. It brought me pleasure just to see it, and I can only imagine what it would be for you. But there's a picture on your website of this little stem cutting, but it has these long, strong roots. Now, this
yeah.
must be very rewarding for you.
It is. It is. It's so, I mean, I had a friend who I met at a Heritage Rose conference, the one that was down in Florida where Malcolm Manners is, and she was telling me that she propagated roses all the time, and I said, you know, I just can't get them to go, et cetera, et cetera, and she said, well, you just need to get one of those backyard mister kits, and I did, and I think that's really been the key to success because, well, a couple of things. That, because it keeps them evenly moist.
Mm-hmm.
And then I use those, like, coconut husk planting plugs. You know, they're just, they look like kind of big, they're kind of bullet shaped. And you just, you prepare your cutting and you put it down in that husk material. And it's the perfect medium in that it stays damp, but it never gets soggy.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, I was just thrilled when it worked. I mean, I couldn't believe it. I was like, wow. And then also too, I think the location, you know, you've got to find just the right spot where it's not shady, but it never really gets more than bright. I've been having trouble. We had a big storm in March, and this old tree I had actually blew down, and that's where my misters were set up, and I've been having trouble since then with them. I'm not having as good of a success rate, so if I get a chance this weekend, I'm going to try to put some shade cloth up, you know, because mm-hmm. I think that makes a difference, so mm-hmm. That's my plan, and it is rewarding, and it's so rewarding to know that if, you know, any of the cemeteries or any of the other nurseries or collectors, or, you know, if something happens to their plant, you know, there are backups out there, and mm-hmm. I can provide that for people. That's a good feeling.
Oh, I'm sure that it is. Now, I know that you are the rose nut. We've definitely certified that tonight. But and we share that with you. But you also grow a lot of companions for your roses. So what are some of your favorites?
I have a lot. Gee, imagine that. Mm-hmm. I am really loving a couple of plants that I think are real workhorses as far as kind of that bare knees issue sometimes you get with some roses.
The naked knee syndrome.
Also, yeah, naked knee, and also like a good kind of blooming ground cover that's a good weed suppressor. And I know you grow a lot of companions, too. Do you grow Nepeta?
Oh, my goodness, yes. Yeah.
Yes, yes.
Oh, it's just wonderful. Just wonderful.
It is.
Brings in the bees, that's for sure.
It does. And I love that shade of blue. It just goes with any rose shade. It just looks beautiful with it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so easy. You can divide it. I mean, you can take a saw to that stuff and cut four pieces of it, and you've got four new plants. I mean, it's just, you know, it's absolutely no maintenance.
It's
so
very
I
forgiving.
I love that. Yeah, and there's all different heights now that you can get. You can get the little petite kind. You can get the taller kind. You can get white. I think they even may have a pink. I love that stuff. And it does really do a good job on smothering weeds.
It does.
And then the other thing I really like is the proper name for it is Cranesbill. It's a geranium, but not like we think of as a annual type geranium. You know, it's a perennial geranium with much smaller flowers, but same kind of foliage.
And that's kind of an heirloom plant. That's been around for a long time, and it just does really well. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it has, and it's very popular in England. They've been growing it with roses over there, and so I decided to give it a try, and I have this one variety called mourning, like, you know, grieving a loss, mourning widow. And it's like almost like a jet black inky purple. Yeah, and it's just,
that's nice.
It's gorgeous. It's really, really pretty. In groups of like four or five plants with the roses. It's a real delicate flower, but it has a real presence when it's grouped together. And you can cut it. I think it's real pretty in a vase. I try to get a lot of the blues and the purples and the lavenders. I think they go so well with all the different shades of the roses. And if you use it enough, like if you kind of repeat it through your garden, it'll tie any kind of roses together, you know, regardless of their shade. It really will unify, you know, the garden. So I love those two.
Those are nice.
I love bearded iris. Can you grow those up there?
Now, I have bearded iris, and they typically grow very, very well. Now, this year I've had a little rotting because we've had just so much rain. We've had so much rain. So my irises are a little sad. Kind of moving them around just to get them out of the water, but I love them, and I'm from the great state of Tennessee, so irises are huge, and I have to have them in my garden, so I'm moving them to higher ground.
That's a good idea, you know. And the other thing that I realized about iris recently, they had a lot of them at the Sacramento Cemetery, and they were telling me that they like moisture in the spring, you know, maybe not flood zone level moisture, but then they like to be really dry in the summer. And I was having problems with some of mine rotting because I had put them too close to the base of my rose, which, you know, I'm always going to give a little extra water. So I'm going to keep that in mind next time I'm planting the iris and kind of keep them there, kind of on the, you know, the drier like edge of the bed more than so close to the roses that I water a lot.
We have iris around.
Go ahead.
We have iris around our little pond. Our little pond is cute, and it is, you know, we do have fish and frogs, but it's small, and irises are around it, but we've had so much water that the pond just keeps overflowing. So far, the fish have not, you know, left the pond. We keep thinking they're just going to swim right out because there's so much water. But so that's where many of the irises were, and it's like, the pond is friend right now.
Fortunately, they're pretty easy to dig up and replace, you know. It's and the other thing that I really like too are the Siberian iris. I'm sure you probably have some of those.
Yes, I do have a few of those.
Yeah, I think they're great with roses. And the foliage looks so pretty, even when they're not blooming. You know, it's got that spiky shape to it that contrasts with, like, the roundness of the rose bushes and the rose flowers. So I'm kind of getting into those. And you know, the more roses you get, the less time you have to take care of everything else. So the companions had better, like, you know, show up and do their job and keep going. And and those, I think, really are worth their spot.
I think those are great ones. Now, Susan, you grow organically, and many of our listeners are wanting to do that more and more. People are moving away, as you know, from chemicals. So you're doing this on a great scale. What advice would you have for someone who's trying to move from chemicals to more organic growing practices?
Well, I have a lot of thoughts on that. Everybody's, as they say, your mileage may vary, but for me, what I found that works are some pretty simple things. I think the most important thing is to choose a disease-resistant variety, regardless of whatever style rose you like, old, new. If it is a martyr to black spot, it's a martyr to black spot, you know? Something that may do really poorly here in my humidity is going to be absolutely clean in California. And something that rusts and gets powdery mildew in California, well, I don't have that here, fortunately. Mm-hmm. So, I can grow the ones that just look yucky out there. So a lot of it is trial and error, which can get a little expensive. But like here in Nashville, we have the Learning Garden at Cheekwood Botanical Garden.
Mm-hmm.
And it's there to show people what roses do well here in Tennessee. Mm-hmm. And there's also the whole Earthkind line of roses. I think those have been trialed in a lot of different states and have shown, themselves to be healthy and hardy. I think that paying attention to your rose is a huge part of it too. If you're going to have a rose, you need to look at it at least every other day.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're looking at that rose every day and you start seeing, gosh, I've got aphids, and you get out the hose and put it on jet and blast those suckers off, it not only feels really good, but you haven't used anything that's bad for anybody. It's water.
Mm-hmm.
And if you knock those things down every couple of days, they're not here for a long time. And usually they're gone. Just with a conscientious blast of the hose every other day, I release ladybugs and praying mantis. You can get them on eBay. Look for somebody who doesn't harvest them from the wild, but who actually has a farm and raises them.
Mm-hmm.
And they come to you, and you just open up their little mesh bag and set them out at dusk, and you will see them. And, if you do that a couple of seasons in a row, then you don't have to order them anymore. The praying mantis, they're so cool. They send you these pods, and you use a little a garbage bag tie, and you wire them on underneath your rose bush, and those things hatch. And you see 120 little tiny baby praying mantis running around. And by the end of the summer, you see big ones, and they eat stuff. Bring in the birds, provide water for the birds, provide a safe place for the birds. The birds will eat a lot of bugs. Keep your roses well watered. Mostly, when they get stressed or diseased is because they dry out, mm-hmm. So keep them well watered. Use mulch. The only fertilizers I use are a composted horse manure and what is that? Neptune's Harvest. I use I think it's seaweed and fish emulsion. But, there's all kinds of stuff out there now, the byproducts from the ocean. They're great. Coffee grinds, eggshells. I mean, think back to how our grandmothers did it, mm-hmm. Homemade compost. All those things promote that slow growth. When you use a strong fertilizer that's just so full of nitrogen, and it sends out all that tender green growth. That's what the bugs like, you know. but when it's growing really slowly and normally, and it's kind of hardening off as it grows, you just don't get as many bugs. And now black spot, I mean, you know, for me, it was learning to live with it, you know, to a certain amount. I mean, you know, some of my friends who I've gotten to try roses, they'll say, oh my gosh, my leaves are turning yellow and brown and they're falling off. And I'm, that's normal. You know, they'll fall off, but they'll come right back. Mm-hmm. And I remember Kim Rupert, who's a dear friend and mentor and total friend of the rose. When I would get all upset, he'd say, just let it be. Just step back and watch it and see what's happening. You know, you don't always have to just intervene immediately. I have yet to have a rose killed by black spot. It might look lousy and I might be, you know, embarrassed for somebody to see it in August, but it's not going to kill the plant, mm-hmm. you know? So those are kind of the things that I try to do, but I really do think that, or, you know, we talked last time too, I think, about if you're interested in growing roses, call your local rose society or, you know, get in touch with the Heritage Rose Foundation and ask them what old roses do well in, you know, in the area in which you are trying to garden. That's big, you know, like, I was just heartbroken to see some of those monsters out in California that they're not going to do well here for me, no matter what I do, because, you know, I have winter and I have humidity. So it's nice to just go and see them there, you mm-hmm. know, and enjoy them there, and then grow what does well for you where you are and be happy with that. I mean, that's a big part too, I think, of the local flower movement, is let's enjoy the seasons. You know, we don't have to have peonies in November, and you know, we don't have to have all this out of season stuff trucked in from all over the world. We can say, well, it's March. We have daffodils, we have tulips, we have, you know, the foxglove. And then as you move into summer, you know, there's just that natural progression of flowers. You know, enjoy that.
Great advice. Susan, it's been so lovely to talk to you. We could probably talk all day, but I think we'll have to save some things for the next time.
Well, you know what? I always like to leave a little for the next time, because I sure hope there'll be a next time. I just love talking to y'all. Y'all are great folks.
Well, we love what you're doing. We're very supportive. We love knowing that roses are in such good hands, and that you're going to help getting them into other hands. So keep passing it on. Keep doing all this great work that you're doing. Very worthy work for the rose world.
Well, thank you. Okay. Bye-bye, y'all.
Always a treat to get to talk to Susan and see what's growing in her Tennessee garden. Be sure and check out her website, restorationroses.com. We provided a link to that site on today's show page. Well, friends, that's all the time we have for this edition of the Rose Chat Podcast, and we thank you for listening. Join us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We'd love to hear from you. Until next time, happy gardening from your friends at Rose Chat.
You've been listening to the Rose Chat Podcast with Chris Van Cleve and Teresa Byington, expert rose gardeners who want to help you achieve the rose garden of your dreams. Don't miss an episode. Listen anytime on our website at rosechatpodcast.com, or listen on the go via the Rose Chat app on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. Share this podcast with your social networks and join us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram by using the hashtag RoseChat. Join us next time for another edition of the Rose Chat Podcast. The Rose Chat Podcast is a production of the Rose Chat Media Group, Birmingham, Alabama.